a quorum, so we are calling the September 23rd work session is in order. First order of business is the roll call. Braulio is...
I'm here.
Jim is...
I'm here.
Mr. Brannigan's here. Mr. Berman...
Here.
...is here. Oh, Updike. Mr. Updike. Little tiny guy. Is here. Okay. So we're all here and accounted for, so... First order of business, since we did the roll call, is the Community Planning Month proclamation in lieu of a volunteer dinner and a monthly proclamation.
I didn't say that. This is Derek Tokos, Community Development. I haven't been much for proclamations. You know that. I haven't brought one of these to you before. And
you're right, you haven't.
We've done a nice job of acknowledging the various committees at those volunteer appreciation events that have kind of tapered off. And I think this is a good opportunity to put a plug in for community planning, the work that you guys do, the work that other volunteers, such as the volunteers on the City Center Revitalization Planning Advisory Committee that we have going right now. And we have ad hoc committees going all the time on various items. So this language is language that the American Planning Association puts out as a template, then, you know, with the expectation that you adjust it and make it work for your local community, and that's what I've done. So any thoughts you have on the content of the proclamation, I intend to put this on for October 7th. Bob?
Grammatical things.
Sure.
Okay. You really need to have consistent use of the Oxford comma. So the third whereas needs a comma between employers and.
Third whereas needs it between employers and? Oh, yeah. A comma?
Yeah, you need a comma there. And on the fifth one, the word public seems out of place. I'm not sure what the
intent. I don't know that it adds value. I'll just delete it.
Good. Okay.
Looked okay to me. I didn't. You know, I don't know what more you can say about it.
So, Bill, would you be up for make it? Can you make October 7th?
October 7th? I thought it was November 7th.
It'd be right up. Huh?
I thought it was November that it said.
October 7th.
Oh, October 7th.
Coming up.
Yeah, I should be able to.
That'd be great. I was thinking about it, and then Dustin's the chair of the City Center Advisory Committee. I thought I'd reach out, see if he could make it. And then in this proclamation, we also acknowledge our partner agencies, and so I thought I'd reach out to Meg Reed and see if she could make it from DLCD. She's been, for example, very helpful with this estuary work, and that seemed reasonable?
Yes. To me.
Okay.
You and I aren't going.
Great. Then I'll move this forward. Thanks for the Bob for the edits.
Okay. Item 2B is the Oregon Housing Needs Analysis, the rulemaking process.
Yes. Put together just an update for you. In part, it was timely because the State Department of Administrative Services just released they call it ONA or OHNA methodology. That methodology, I trust you guys took a deep dive and read through it thoroughly.
Oh, absolutely. I did.
They are accepting comments, I think, through the 4th of October or something like that. If you're so inclined to provide comment, I mean, obviously feel free to. What this is, you know, when we did our housing capacity analysis in 2022, two, you know, we took a look at Portland State's forecast for housing need moving forward, and it was pretty paltry, 215 units, dwelling units. They assume that Newport's population growth will flatline within that 20-year period because, frankly, aging out with an older demographic. We said, no, that's not right. We went with it's basically an extrapolation of our last 20 years and forecasted a similar growth rate moving forward. That got us, 626 units over the next 20 years? So that's what we used as a basis for our housing production strategy and what strategies we'd be pursuing to try to help facilitate the construction of that kind of housing over that time frame. What you have here with this methodology is the state's best cut at not only what our forecasted need is over the next 20 years, but our current unmet demand. And they broke that out by affordability categories. And I attached that table in the excerpts, which was just a few sheets, and I thought it was pretty telling. I mean, their forecasted need for Newport is just over 1,900 units.
Yes.
Over the next 20 years, 600 of which are in the affordability range where you'd have to be subsidized housing. And I thought it was pretty telling. We've, I think, spent a lot of time talking about unmet demand in Newport, how our you know, rental rates are, I mean, our vacancy rates are very, very low, how we have a considerable amount of in-commuting, some of which from folks who would prefer to live close to where they work, but they can't afford it. I think that bears it out. We're not going to be held to that target. We did our housing capacity analysis and production strategy. It's been accepted by the state. We don't have. We're in the queue again in 8 years. But it will be a point of reference and emphasis, and I suspect it's going to be used by agencies like Oregon Housing Community Services, where they're trying to direct funds in through nonprofits who can and for-profit developers who do affordable housing projects. They're going to be using this information, the Surfview Village projects of the world. We've got another one moving through the pipeline that Northwest Coastal Housing is working on. It'll be another 28 units of affordable.
You know. Where?
That's up in Aggie Beach. They've got some other property up there.
Cool.
So these kind of figures really do, I think, support that. Now, this is kind of a remake of how the state wants to approach housing planning. They kind of rebuilt that in 2023 with the House Bill 2001, and there's another one in here that was referenced. And they're running down three tracks. This is the housing needs and production piece, the methodology. How much do you, what's our target? They have a housing accountability set of rules that they'll be rolling out also January 1st of 2025. I haven't seen those yet, so I'm not sure exactly what that looks like. They have a different, advisory committees working on that. I actually am on the advisory committee for housing capacity and urbanization. You'll notice probably in the materials, that one's the last one to wrap up. It'll wrap up January 1st of 2026. And one of the things that we're taking a hard look at with that, we're trying to get the state to really focus on development-ready land and the role that infrastructure has to play here. We've got plenty of land inside of our urban growth boundary, but a lot of that land will never be developed because of the terrain and issues associated with that, where it's just too costly. You just can't make anything pencil out. You know, we went through that exercise for that whole, what was that whole 80-acre piece sitting up above the middle school, which requires an extension of Harney Street, which the engineers estimated was going to cost close to $50 million. I mean, when you're looking at that kind of infrastructure cost just to get services to the property, it just doesn't make sense. That's probably a property that shouldn't be in our urban growth boundary. We shouldn't be looking to address housing needs in that location because it's just not realistic. So trying to get the state to think more about that than just, okay, you know, you've got 700 acres and you need 350 acres of residentially classified land, that's good enough. Well, it's only good enough if it can actually be developed. So that rulemaking is going a slower path. They're putting quite a bit of thought into different ways of tackling that particular issue and how jurisdictions can quantify what they have that's development ready in a manner that is workable for them, cost effective for them, that they actually have the resources to do. You can't basically take a look at every parcel and run multiple different urban development concepts on it to try to figure out developability. That's way too complicated. Nobody has the resources for that. We can't engineer it all down to the detail. So some way to kind of reasonably estimate that, where jurisdictions can take either one defined approach as kind of a safe harbor or some palette. And we'll see what that looks like.
There were numbers listed in a number of these papers that you shared with us. With the new methodologies for this housing needs, the estimate went from 620 up to 1,900. Now, on other charts in the reading material, it indicated that the 20-year increase in population was only going to be around 1,900. Mm-hmm. Over 20 years. Well, 19 new homes or housing needed, those are based all on this head of household kind of concept that they've added to the methodology in that 18 through 44 cohort. So I got the feeling that I was looking at 2022 information and 2024 information and wondering just which one is true. They give us the house numbers with the new methodology, 300% increase in what we had previously calculated. So what's that new population number? It sure as hell ain't the 1,900 that we were looking at previously. So if we need 1,900 homes in the next 20 years, that, I would assume, pencils out to a heck of a lot more than 1,900 people. So what population growth are they understanding? Because I know this is all about planning, but it's a stickler for me because I still haven't seen our source of water for all those additional homes and people. And so I can't take this stuff serious when they are going to build more houses than we may have water to provide, unless we're relying on more fish processors leaving, which would kill us.
One thing you do
raise...
What
are you going to do for water, Bradley?
No. One, it's interesting. You raise
desalination.
A good point that we're kind of starting to wrestle with is we don't... When we do our capital plans for water, wastewater in particular, we don't assume a demand for 1,900 homes. I mean, that's not in any of our forecasts. But if that's going to be the new target and aspirational target out there, part of me says we probably ought to take a look at, okay, if we're really looking at 1,900 homes,
yeah,
what's that mean in terms of improvements to our water and wastewater systems?
Yeah.
Because the legislature is making funds available for infrastructure, and they want to tie those infrastructure investments to housing production. Well, maybe we ought to have, as we're updating these facility plans, have them look at that high-end forecast and say, well, what's that mean?
Right.
What's that mean in terms of having to upsize this line or upsize that pump station or, you know, whatever?
Sure.
So that we could then actually have a project we could take to the legislature when they're doling out funds.
Well, I agree with everything you said, but I'm I'm curious just how much more water we will have if we actually ever do build a new reservoir and dam.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're still collecting from the same sources, so it doesn't seem to me that we're going to have all that much more water unless we're relying on the heavier predicted rainfalls because mm-hmm. of climatic change. And so we build a reservoir that's a hell of a lot bigger so we can trap that water that we'll need for those 1,900 households. I just think the planning, this whole planning is suspect because they only talk about little pieces of it. We can project how many people we can use the 2000 to 2020 and growth rates in the city, and we can project that and extrapolate that out and say that's the way it's going to be. But again, there's no consideration taken into the resources we have to be able to provide for these people.
Well, I tell you, over the last 20 years, we produced a little over 700, like around 750 housing units.
Yeah, you said we were doing better than the expected. Yeah. We've been fortunate in that
but
regard.
But that's nowhere close to 1900, though.
It isn't.
You know, so it's a bit daunting in that regard. When you think about it, we've got about just under 6,000 total housing units. So when you think about adding 1,900 over the next 20, that's a pretty big
when
job.
When we have about 6,000, is that what you
total, mean? Yeah.
Total, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
We use census numbers off.
That's a 30% increase.
But, I mean, are we going to have enough population moving here that you need 1,900 million?
Well, that's what they're projecting.
Well,
and I agree with you.
That's the thing. The part that's a little trickier on this is unmet demand. I mean, we've got a lot of – we're an employment center for Lincoln County.
Yes.
And so there are a lot of people, you know, who incommute. You know, so that's that unmet demand or are in less than ideal housing circumstances.
That's about 4,000, isn't it?
It's 5,000.
5,000.
About 5,000
people
daily.
Commute in here, and every one of those people has a family, or most of them have a family.
Correct.
Now, not all of them, many of them don't want to live in Newport. I mean, they're happy in Walport or Sletz or Toledo or wherever. But,
commute in from.
But that's a huge part of it. And then the predictions
of
second homes and rentals. We know that vacation rentals aren't going up, long term rentals might. But that's not a very good business model, I don't think, a long-term home in
that's fair.
In Newport.
They tried to. I haven't gone in and really looked at how they tackled seasonal housing, either short-term rentals or second homes.
Mm-hmm.
And my suspicion is, you know, they would have had to have taken a uniform approach, which may not be consistent with how we're managing short-term rentals. Because how we do it is different than how Coos Bay does it or how Astoria does it and so on and so forth. They're going to pick a methodology, I suspect, and go with that. I didn't really dig into that piece. It's a fair one, particularly for Coastal.
Mr. Updike.
Yeah, something I noticed on that, because I wondered if that was the trigger for such a much higher number. And it does look like it's a very broad definition of second homes.
Mm.
So not just SCRs, but any home occupied probably for less than 6 months, which we don't regulate. So given the broad definition, I assume it's a big part of that fractional increase that we've seen. But it would be nice to know how much of that 1,900 is attributed to lost homes due to vacation homes.
No, that's fair. I mean, I looked at this. I was just looking because they broke them by region. I only attached in the excerpt the full report has all of the different regions. But there are pretty good sized numbers associated with communities that don't really have second home demand. Lebanon, for example. I mean, that's a community just under 20,000. You know, they've got a pretty good sized target too, over 2,000, 2,081. Proportionally, though, that's not as much of an increase as what we have, and that may be the second home piece of it.
Wonder what Sweet Home has.
Sweet Home? Sweet Home has 846. And Sweet Home's what, just under 5,000 in population?
That's stretching it. A moment ago you were talking, and I didn't quite understand. In the new methodologies, they're talking about homes that they can, that they know from tax records and stuff that are households. And then they talked about second homes. And then they had the term vacation homes. Now, are vacation homes VRDs, STRs, or is a vacation home a second home that is used by all members of family? I couldn't quite understand when they say vacation homes, what are they truly talking about? As an example, the house next to me is owned by 5 siblings. Mm-hmm. It was the for years it was the family house. That's where the kids were raised. But, you know, mom, dad are gone. The kids have scattered, but they keep it. And so, well, it could be considered a second home. It could be considered a vacation home, which is kind of how they use it, with different kids and different generations using it. But I didn't know what they were doing with STRs, VRDs in their accounting of homes. And even rental, full-time rentals and stuff, which they could pull from tax records, because those of us that have rental properties, obviously that shows up in our tax forms if we're doing full-time rentals. So, I'll shut up. I just was unclear what they were saying.
I think the most salient point is what Jim raises, global, at the whole Newport level. There doesn't seem to be anybody concerned about future water supplies. And there was proposal to look at, I don't remember what, Rocky Creek or one of those, and maybe get a water district together for all of the and the council just keeps ignoring that, saying, well, we got a dam, we're good. I don't know that that's the case, and I don't think they do either, and they're just not exploring any alternatives. And it's going to come back to bite them sometime. I'll probably be gone literally by then.
Yeah, you and I both. But.
Yeah, the Mid-Coast Watershed Council and others have been engaging with the city council. They just had some folks here talking to, I think it was Fran Reck or Penelope Kasmerick, I forget which. We're here talking to the council just at their last meeting. But Bob, to your point, it's been talk. I mean, Rocky Creek was a water right ask of the state decades ago, and then that water right really hasn't gone anywhere in terms of perfecting it. And the city has focused on the replacement reservoir, and that in of itself is a big lift too. To be fair, I mean that's
oh, yeah.
Exceedingly expensive project.
But that the main purpose of that is not water.
Right.
Main purpose of that is seismic protection.
Maintain
if there
water.
Is, yeah, if we well, do get more maintain, water out of that, it's yeah. a side effect.
And maintain
you,
a water supply.
You get,
could there
you
be?
Get more, you're going to be impounding more than the two existing reservoirs can impound.
Right.
So
yeah.
you'll have more water storage.
But that doesn't ultimately mean that you can. Unless the storage is enough
water, right?
for a year,
no.
then, yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
All right. That's my piece. Thank you, Jim, for bringing that up.
Well, the water, I mean, we could build a desalination plant.
Boy.
Yeah, that would be inexpensive. We can put it at the Nye Beach turnaround.
A little bit expensive, but what the hell?
Well, I mean, San Diego, Carlsbad, California's got a desalination plant.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
50 million gallons a day.
But we don't have the population to be able to support that kind of a tax for a bond to build.
You know, I think the legislature is starting. I mean, the last short session, they threw some money at infrastructure. They didn't tie it directly to housing production, and that certainly is the governor's desire to see it tied directly to housing. So you know, you're going to see, it'll be interesting to see how this moves forward. I mean, these are lofty targets, which are going to require big infrastructure investments. Is the legislature prepared to step up in a meaningful way? Because if you don't get those, they're just numbers on a table. We're not going to produce that.
And let's say everything that's here goes through, and then 20 years from now, they look back and say, well, Newport, you only did 1,000. You only did half of what you were supposed to. What then is the implication of that? I mean, do we then not qualify for future infrastructure money, or what?
Yeah, this gets into the housing accountability side of it. And it's interesting because, you know, they say they'll put you into this housing acceleration program, but stuff at some point just runs smack into reality for us. Now, I get it. There are jurisdictions that throw up a lot of barriers to new housing because they don't want it. Their constituents don't want it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Many of those are affluent, and they don't want to see, you know, a diverse range of housing because, and they'll you know, those are the ones, I think, where the state may get some traction in a housing acceleration program. With us, I mean, you, at some point, you're just dealing with reality. I'm sorry, you know. I mean, our terrain is tough. I mean, if you're not, and so what I'll be doing, because I have to do a 3 or 4 year report, which is now like a couple years out, I think. And I'm documenting when we, for example, with the Housing Oregon's Workforce, the HOW bill that we were part of, that we had funding in up to the last day of the legislative session, and it got stripped out because they were going through their ways and means, you know, gyrations to make the numbers work. Well, I've documented that. I'm putting that in the report. You know, when we're asking for it and we tied it to a housing project and you strip the funding out, you know, you got a role here too. You know, so, you know, plus we are doing a lot. I mean, we just had ordinance 2222 was approved by the council. So that was a number of changes there that I think will help on the margins. We're doing what we can to help move projects along. But we are dealing with the terrain we have, which is not very forgiving compared to the valley.
Well, I mean, 20 years, I mean, this whole thing is a long-term aspiration.
Yep.
High likelihood that the state, that the governor and the state legislature will have turned over multiple times, and heaven only knows whether this will still even be in effect 5 years from now.
It will 5 years from now.
You know, it's funny,
Kotech will get
Bill, you say that, and I think that's absolutely fair. It'll be out there in an effect, but we'll be moving on to jobs, and it'll be about job generation.
Yeah, something else.
Because, you know, we've gone through these cycles.
Right.
You know, where, okay, housing's a key issue. No, housing's no longer a key issue. It's the economy and getting jobs produced. Well, now that's no longer an issue. It's the environment and protecting riparian areas. We go through cycles where certain issues, you know, dominate the legislative conversation, dominate society. Housing is I don't want to minimize it. Housing is, you know, for many, the biggest, you know, challenge in terms of affordability. But it is cyclical. The housing will catch up. And it won't be as pressing of an issue.
And they'll move
something
on
else
to
will.
Jobs. So you have these 1,900 units, you've designated just slightly less than a third of them as being affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you suggesting that the traditional single-family residence is a dinosaur, a thing of the past?
No, we still have pretty good-sized numbers here. They're saying over 120% area median income, so that'd be your higher-end housing. Still have a demand for over 500 units over a 20-year period. 600 units in the 80 to 120, which is kind of what would be your entry level. Some of your entry level market rate would be in there. So no, it's what is telling is that traditional market rate housing is beyond the reach of a lot of people, a lot of folks that live and work in Newport. And that's why we have such a large number of subsidized housing.
That was the mantra 2 years ago when we were developing the housing strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, wages weren't supporting the cost of housing.
Work at the resource doesn't bring big money.
That's absolutely right.
You know, I don't know. One chart that Derek gave us indicated something like 47% of the people in Newport don't even come close to the median family income for a family, and then they listed the housing prices that they would qualify for, and like 17% of them make so little money they are on the teetering edge of homelessness. That's 17% of the community. That's an incredible number. And then when you look at the next quartile, or whatever, how many they were broken into, you were still talking about houses 210,000 and 280,000. Gee, I look at the realtor things, and seldom do I ever see a house under 320,000. I mean, there's just not many houses that a lot of people can ever qualify for. They wouldn't have a down payment, even if they were first-time home buyers. You know, they couldn't possibly qualify for the houses that I see listed. I just don't see anything listed that would be considered affordable.
Yeah, I'm going to be following up with the Housing Authority on this and talk to Karen, their director, about it. Because, I mean, you look at 0 to 30% median family income. I mean, there's you're basically on, you know, almost homeless at that point. Yes, I mean, yes. $430 a month rent. Yeah. I mean,
where are you going?
That's half of Surfview Village, which is affordable at 60% median area income. How do you offer that? I mean, that's got to be an incredible amount of subsidy just to do it.
Yeah. Well, my wife and I are pretty stupid. We rent a 700 square foot apartment, one bedroom. If it's one person, they get it for $1,000. If it's two people, they get it for $1,200. And yet, you look in the listings, and from that very same paper, they were talking about that kind of an apartment would go for $1,440.
But isn't it wise to have a good tenant?
Well,
at a fair, or at a really responsible rent, rather than
I do. I'm tied into the Hatfield, so I get all these researchers, biologists, you know, that kind of a thing. Highly educated, you know, they're past the, you know, breaking and entering aspect of rentals and stuff. And every time
just a hemp smell.
I think we beat this one up pretty good, guys.
I think the state just announced you could raise the rents by 10%.
And I haven't done that. I'm going the other direction.
There's a rent cap, you know, annually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's right either. If you're going to cap people's expenditures, you should do it all the way across the board. Gasoline, food, you know, don't take it out on landlords. Lawyers can only charge so much.
Ready, Bill? We have one more item on that.
That'll be the day. Speaking of
Okay. So, Derek, do you need any work or anything from our commission on the housing needs analysis?
No, this was just an update of where the state's at with that process and where it's going. And it felt timely because, you know, they are actually taking general public testimony on that methodology. So if you are interested, please feel free to, you know, drop them a note with questions about short-term rentals and things, seasonal housing, or anything else in that particular report that doesn't make sense. This, you know, is going to change between now and when it's finalized, because they are going to be taking into consideration that public comment and making revisions. And these numbers may change as a result of that feedback as well. So, but, you know, in talking to folks up at Department of Land Conservation and Development, I didn't get the sense that the numbers are going to, you know, swing dramatically. They may get trimmed here or upped a little bit there, but I suspect these are reasonably close to where they're going to land at the end of the day.
Were you a little shocked when it came in at 1900? Or were you just open-minded and figured?
It's an aspirational target. And the fact that they were actually tackling unmet demand plus forecasted need.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes more sense to me.
That would to me as well.
You know, because we've never really tried to quantify the existing unmet demand.
I would wonder how many homes, how many rental units, apartments, condos the city would need just to get back up to a 5% vacancy rate when we're running at 1% typically, I'm told by realtors. So, I mean, to get to 5% vacancy, which is what that new methodology is based on, I mean, that's, I would imagine, several hundred houses just to get to that point.
I'll share some with you too, because this just gives you a sense of how our role is limited in terms of the overall cost burden. Sure. I'm meeting with Todd Woodley later in the week, you know, and Todd is the developer for the Windhaven projects. Okay, so Windhaven Phase One was completed in 2022, 66 units, I believe, and he said that their tax assessment on that is $1,600 per unit per year, okay? So Windhaven Phase 2 gets wrapped up, that bridge 2023 and 2024. So some of the units, they phase that one in. 2,900 is what they're looking at per unit per year. Almost a doubling.
Yeah.
So now they're gonna have a conversation with, as they should, with the assessor's office. There's a property tax appeal. There's processes that he needs to go through. But he's like, he told me, I can't move forward with phase three if I'm facing this.
Right.
Because, you know, those get passed on to the renter. I mean, that's where it goes.
That's where it goes, yes.
And so those market rate rents just go up. And you guys know where those two projects are. I couldn't tell you that there's any difference with respect to the property's condition. It's not like one property is oceanfront with big views.
Yeah.
I mean, they're pretty similarly situated. So I don't see it. You know, and so he's asking for help from the city, and there's anything we really can do.
Yeah.
Other than be cheerleaders on him getting that rectified, or at least at a minimum, beginning to figure out why such a big swing,
great discrepancy.
You know, when those two projects went online relatively close together, I mean, you're within a 3-year span.
That's another indication of barriers to meeting your 1,900 housing unit goal.
Yeah. Yeah, on a market rate project, so those taxes, I mean, they're just going to get rolled. That just goes right through to the renter, who drives those rates up.
Does in my place.
Okay, moving on.
Yes.
2C, updating of Newport's SDC methodology. One of our favorite subjects.
Yeah, it is. I actually like working with this stuff. You recall in 2017, you know, we did a major overhaul of the methodology. We shifted to a price per square foot approach on residential, which really did, you know, going away from that one size fits all, which really did help things with the smaller homes. And we trimmed out a lot of capital projects that we otherwise could collect for, because we recognized that we're not likely to build them in the next 20 years. So, and a lot of that was done, too, to give our policymakers the room to put that affordable housing excise tax in place, which they ultimately did. This go-around, I don't see a big major change. I think this is more updating and improving the utility of what we have as opposed to a major overhaul, because it's been working reasonably well. But, you know, there are some enhancements. I'd very much like to get a web-based calculator estimator out there that the public can use. We get hit up on that all the time. You know, from a person who's just doing an expansion to their house, or maybe it's, you know, a modest project, to the person who's doing a brand new, you know, apartment project like Todd Windhaven Phase 3. They all want to know, you know, okay, what am I looking at here in terms of total upfront costs? So not just SDCs, although we'd use this process to get the web-based calculator, but we'd roll in the construction excise taxes because we have one for affordable housing. We collect for the school district for theirs. And then we, you know, you've got your normal building permitting fees. Because most of us are just trying to figure out what's my budget number across all that stuff. And we should be able to get there. We'll have a more complicated calculator that's Excel-based that we need to have updated. FCS group who worked with us last time did a nice Excel-based one that I've been limping along, but it's getting at the end of its life because I keep pushing it out and having to rebuild the formulas. But it's important because there are no, you know, for our purposes, I mean, we have to go in at times and figure out, you know, what type of development is the most similar to what's going on so we can match things up and that kind of thing. But when we do this, you know, I put together a scope of work.
Yes.
Hope you had a chance to take a look at it. Would appreciate any thoughts you have. If you don't have them now, if you want to individually just kick me some thoughts, that's, you know, it's fair. Our hope is to get this out so that we can get at least far enough into this process that rate adjustments could be factored in for the next fiscal year budget. So we're going to need to have at least some draft numbers by March, April at the latest, so that it can feed into the budget process. And, you know, as part of this, you would see, I don't have it structured where we're going to set up another advisory committee, because like I said, I don't think this is an overhaul of methodology. This is a
fine tune
and improve upon it. And so the way I set this up is that there would be an internal technical team. So we'd have our, you know, public works and engineering would be part of that. And then we would push this out to you guys as the planning commission and the council strategically through the process to make sure we're going the right way. That seem reasonable for this kind of...
It does. The most valuable information when it came back to us, of course, would be what is it under the current system and what would it be under the proposed by category.
Right.
You know, if it's a fine tuning, yeah, mm-hmm. That's probably appropriate. I did have one grammar thing.
Oh, sure. Go for it.
All right. The the third section, draft scope of work.
Yeah.
Right above that, paragraph right above it.
Yeah.
There's a word further in there that doesn't seem to make any sense. Or it needs more words.
I'll fix it. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the only thing I found in that category in here.
Yeah, so through the process, you're going to see that, the comparators. You're going to see the, where, like you said, what is it proposed versus what do we have now? I also made sure that we're interested in seeing what the full upfront costs are, not just SDCs. So we're doing comparisons to other communities. You know, maybe our SDCs end up being a little bit higher than somebody else's, but our other costs are lower than somebody else's. Upfront cost is what people who are developing want to know. They don't care about it being SDC versus a construction excise tax or a building permit fee. They want to know, what's my total upfront cost to do this project? So I think that'll help. We haven't always, oftentimes in the past, it's just SDC to SDC comparable. I don't really see the full upfront cost. I think that'll be better.
Could you explain to me again what in that document you talk about reimbursement fees, which are no longer part of the SDCs to the developer, I'll let you.
No, that's fair. Legally, we can collect system development charges in two circumstances. We can collect just based on the impact that a project will have on the public system. Okay, so that's the improvement fee, which is what we do now and what we have historically done. But you can also set up a reimbursement fee in your methodology, which gets at capital projects the city funded with other funds that have additional capacity, and the city reimburses itself for the capacity in those projects. That tends to be used, it's complicated, and it tends to be used in bigger cities where they're doing a lot more in the way of capital projects. It's not particularly useful for a community of our size. So in other words, I'll give you an example. Say Gresham does a major water main upgrade with their water utility rates. They fund it with those, and so they go, they double the size of that main, and now it can support a whole lot more development tying into it. They would quantify what that additional capacity is and then factor that into a fee for those
new
that are connected.
Tie-ins. Okay. Thank you.
That would be incredibly complicated.
It does. One of the challenges is always with system development charges and is trying to simplify it so folks can understand it.
Sure.
You know, because they don't work in this arena. Many of them don't.
No.
You know, we're dealing with a lot of folks that aren't professional developers. And so, yeah, trying to avoid throwing in another wrinkle like that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
I've got a quick question or two.
Yeah.
On the selection of proposals, section 8.
Okay.
One question I have is about providing the 10 points for completing the scope of work within 6 months. Normally, I would see a timeline issue as like a requirement. You know, the respondent shall provide the project by X date, yes or no. Is there, in this case, do you have flexibility on timing? So is that why you're trying to encourage them to be quick, but if they're not, they might get less points?
Yeah. That's kind of where we're
it's
at.
It's unusual.
We'd like to have the figures to inform the upcoming budgeting processes, but it's probably not the end of the world. If we had a proposal that was considerably stronger but took more time, that, you know, it's a way of balancing it.
You might want to talk though internally about how you're going to allocate points then, because that's a hard one to allocate.
Okay.
If someone's 9 months, if someone's a year,
yep.
If someone's 6 months, what is that? You know, because there are different ways to do it, all of which could be correct. So that's just one. I just have one other question or comment,
mm-hmm.
And that's on the references. So, I mean, I do a lot of this for public sector clients in California.
Yep.
And what we have begun to do, particularly public agencies, where most of the references, because you are asking for similar work. So if you're asking for similar work, I'm assuming your clients are going to be public sector by and large. And if that's the case, public sectors are really constrained these days
mm-hmm.
to provide a reference other than to say, yes, they worked for us. You editorialize, usually the city attorney advises, don't do that. So what we've to do is reduce the amount of allocation of points for references because it tends to be an on or off thing. Yeah, I remember that. Or no, they never did work for us. And that's about all you get these days. So just give
that's your
thought
point.
As to whether it meant, right? So it's different in the private sector. They will still editorialize on their response, but public is... You don't get a lot.
All right, we'll put some thought to that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Eric, do you expect bottom line the SDCs collected this fiscal year under the old system, and if a new system happens to get implemented by July 1st next fiscal year? Are you looking to have those go up, or are you looking to have them more equitably allocated?
The latter. I don't expect any major increases, but I know we have some categories we really struggle with, and I'd like to the selected consultant to kind of do a deep dive in a few of those. We struggle with apartments can be an issue. The market rate can be an issue sometimes. We really struggle with restaurants or drive-throughs. Those, they're a very high traffic generator, which throws those transportation STCs way up to a point where it doesn't even, you know, it's not even viable.
So this isn't going to be a big change in the revenue. In other words, the budget process could proceed normally, regardless of how long this takes, because it's
right.
not going to.
No, and again, remember, STCs, I mean, we bank those. You know, we're not budgeting to spend what we're collecting in a given year. I mean, we're working right. off of what we've banked previous years, and we'll have already come forward with a package of projects that tap into STCs where appropriate. Right. Just have one last item. The Planning Commission work program, if we're done on this one.
Work program update.
City manager is going to be joining you for the next meeting, so everybody's got to be on their best behavior.
Joining us?
Nina's going to be able to make the October 14th meeting. I have her programmed in on the work session.
Nina Petter, okay.
I may have an update for you on the Night Beach parking. I'm not sure if Beth's going to be all 100% there yet, but we'll see where that lands.
Is the parking committee still in existence? And
mm-hmm. Still working.
Meeting? Yeah.
We're pivoting to a conversation about Nye Beach. We're kind of wrapping up the first full,
right.
you know.
How's it going?
Third Wednesday of every month.
You know, we've had improved vehicle turnover on the Bayfront. We will have, by the end of this month, we should have exceeded 100,000 transactions for the between May and the end of September. Gives you the number. I mean, that, when I say that, that's people either paying in a pay station or mobile pay, where right. they use their phone to pay.
Are the permits all given out?
Hmm?
All bought up?
Permits? Well, we have, it's all electronic permits. The electronic permits, I think it worked reasonably well. One final change that we're making, it has to do with the kind of the roll into the off season for the high demand parking areas. And we talked about it the last meeting. But, you know, our e-permitting collections, we're in 40-something thousand, whereas, you know, I mean, the bulk of the collections are coming from the pay stations and the mobile pay. We had good, we have a number of people picked up the discount permits in the lower demand parking lots, the annual $100 one for the Zone C permit, for example. And our permit numbers were in pretty good shape. We had set, you know, limits on how many we would be making available, and we didn't hit those limits. We came in under those. I think everybody's cognizant of the fact, though, that this was not a normal year. Our fish processing was like non-existent. And so we didn't have as many people down there on the processing side. You know, we'll find out down the road. I mean, from businesses on the retail side, how things went, but I think a lot of it's just the broader, larger economy. Not only parking was really swinging people too much one way or the other.
Is there an intent once the capital expenditure is paid off to contribute some money to the general fund, or nope. is that strictly segregated for parking?
That's segregated for parking. And frankly, it's probably going to get I suspect that there'll be continued conversation about rapid transit and helping pay for that between Nye Beach and the Bayfront, with City Center kind of being the stopping point in between. There's still additional work that needs to be done down there too, Bob. I mean, those three surface lots that we resurfaced down there, that was $250,000, but that's just three lots. We've got a number of others, and you know, they have drainage issues. We picked the easy ones to start with. And so there's plenty of work.
We're not going to have any money to play with for other stuff.
No.
From this.
You know, but, you know, the positive side where I'd say is we're working our way towards self-sufficiency on the parking front so that we're not having to use other resources to deal with parking lot issues. Okay. We're starting to, you know, this should begin able to pay for parking enforcement. We didn't have parking enforcement for a number of years because we had nothing to pay for it. So, you know, this is getting there. It's going to need to be fine-tuned and adjusted, and the committee's having, I think, productive discussions about that. But so far, it's been going okay.
One would not assume that the parking funds will be so bountiful that we could follow through with one of the recommendations on one of these papers that we put a big parking structure down there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's millions right there.
Who is writing these things?
Not going to happen.
No. Outside of city manager at the next meeting, I did want to draw your attention. You got three public hearings. We'll try to be as efficient as we can. But you've got, you've had a number of these where you've had none, and all of a sudden three of them hit the same meeting. It's just weird that way. The one with Wilder's probably going to take quite a bit of time. That's a 75 units. That's a biggie. The four lot townhouse one, and you guys are familiar with Northwest Naturals stuff. That shouldn't take
that one usually goes pretty quickly.
Yeah, those will go reasonably quickly.
Would you consider bifurcating the subdivisions, the Wilder from the Nye Beach?
These are all noticed. We're locked in on these at this point.
Where
we have them listed in the agenda, we can, you know.
I was just thinking of the length of the meeting.
Where's the little townhouse on Nye Street?
That was the used to be the Azar property where that home was. The city ended up having to take that property through receivership and demo it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. You might want to have Northwest Natural go first because.
He'll be in and out pretty fast.
In and out, yeah.
Yeah.
Make them wait the whole meeting.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. All right, so all
nothing
I have.
Else? Ooh, good timing, Derek.
The work session has officially ended.
And it's 7:00, so it's time to.
If you could just give me one second.
Oh, that's good.